translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted. And they all immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. Purport. To draw the attention of common men, sometimes saintly persons, acharyas, and teachers exhibit extraordinary opulences. This is necessary to attract the attention of fools. But a saintly person should not misuse such power for personal sense gratification, like false saints who declare themselves to be God. Even a magician can exhibit extraordinary feats which are not understandable to common men. But this does not mean that the magician is God. It is a most sinful act to attract attention by exhibiting mystic powers and utilizing this opportunity to declare oneself to be God. A real saintly person never declares himself to be God, but always places himself in the position of a servant of God. For a servant of God, there's no need to exhibit mystic powers, and he does not like to do so. But on behalf of the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a humble servant of God performs his activities in such a wonderful way that no common man can dare to act like him. Yet a saintly person never takes credit for such actions, because he knows very well that when wonderful things are done on his behalf by the grace of the Supreme Lord, all credit goes to the master and not to the servant. Prabhave akarshila shabha sanyasi ramana utila sanyasi shabha chadiya asana. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted, and they all immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. Om Gyanatimanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Amritam Gena Tashmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I attended in 1989, I attended the VIHE for the first time, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj was giving a course on Brahma Samhita, and there was a discussion in which Keshava Bharti Maharaj offered or described the pastime of Srila Prabhupada. It was in 1974, San Francisco Rath Yatra, and there were 700 devotees that went on to the San Francisco Airport concourse to greet Srila Prabhupada. They came from the Midwest, all on the West Coast. Everyone converged. So many devotees converged on the San Francisco Airport, and this was pre-security days. You know, hijackings of airplanes hadn't taken place yet. And so, naturally, they started a very vigorous and enthusiastic kirtan. And the kirtan, I think, it was probably, there were great kirtaneers like Vishnu Jan Swami. You know, I'm sure that was present. I don't remember that detail. But at any rate, when Prabhupada's plane touched down, then the kirtan reached a new crescendo. And then when the plane docked at the gate, it went even higher. You know, the devotees were just jumping, and they were just in complete ecstasy, right in the middle of the airport, mind you. Okay, so then people started coming out of the gate, and then the kirtan just went even more intense. You know, the atmosphere just surcharged with devotional ecstasy. And then there was one of these like partition walls, you know, that was maybe went up about maybe 7 feet high. So then Prabhupada stuck his cane up over the partition wall, and devotees recognized his cane, and they just went completely nuts. Okay, so then Prabhupada finally came out of the gate, and all the devotees did dandavat pranams on the concourse floor, right? And has anybody been in Mayapur on Gorpunim day? Raise your hand if you've been there. Okay, now you may have had the problem, just like in Krishna book, there's a description of how all the Lord Brahmas of all the multiple universes converged in one location to offer obeisances. You know, some of them had four heads, but some of them had many more heads. And when they tried to offer all these Brahmas, you know, was that a part of the Brahma Vimohan Leela, you know, to like purify Lord Brahma of his, this Lord Brahma in this universe of any kind of like false conception that he was a big gun. All right, so all of these Lord Brahmas from all these universes came, and they tried to offer obeisances, but they found out there wasn't enough head space on the floor for all of their heads to fit. So it was like that. Keshava Bharti Mari, like at Gorpunim time, you know, during the Jayom prayers, you know, after Mangalarti, there's like about 5,000 pilgrims, you know, villagers from all the outlying regions of Bengal that are there, and maybe 3,000 or 4,000 ISKCON devotees. And there sometimes isn't enough head space on the floor for everyone's heads. So Keshava Bharti Mara, and I've been stuck, you know, just standing up and looking at all the devotees laying on the floor in dandavats. So Keshava Bharti Maharaj was in that situation at that time, you know, when Prabhupada emerged from the gate at the San Francisco airport in 1974. And he was flabbergasted, because all of the businessmen, you know, with their attaché cases, they just were completely stunned. Not only with the display of all these devotees laying on the floor, but Srila Prabhupada coming through, you know, coming out and just completely effulgent. You know, just they were just like amazed to see such a sight. So how many of you have taken Bhakti Shastri? Yeah? And how many of you taught Bhakti Shastri? Okay, there's one verse towards the end of the 18th chapter that begins with Yatra. And it describes an interesting phenomenon. What would that verse be? It describes how when Krishna and Arjuna are present. Anybody know that verse? Okay, you got the first line. It's pretty good. Beating everybody else out, Prabhu. Okay, so wherever Krishna is present, wherever Arjuna is present, then there's victory, great opulence, mystic powers, I think that might have been in the list. So it's not a such an unusual thing. Actually, in the beginning of the sixth chapter of the fifth canto, the activities of Lord Rishabhdev, there's a description of how for a pure devotee, automatically all mystic powers are available for his utilization. And But I guess the point here that Prabhupada makes in the purport is that a devotee doesn't misuse these mystic powers. There's several directions I could take at this point. I think maybe I'll describe in the first chapter of Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada describes under the subheading of happiness in Krishna consciousness. And he lists the 8 yogic cities. Does anybody know those 8? We have arranged in the pujari room 15 pieces of burfi for anybody that knows the Sanskrit and English. This will be your reward if you know the Sanskrit and English for all 8 mystic cities. Anybody know? No. Anyway, Mataji, you know? Okay, what's the Sanskrit in there? Anima. Yeah. Smaller than the smallest. Okay. All right, go ahead. Speak very loud. I'm a deaf old man. I can. Yeah. Anybody know what that one is? Agima? Okay. All right. Now, Krishna did that with Trinavarta, right? Is that one, though? Heavier than the heaviest? Is it? Okay, any more? Okay, you get one piece of burfi, okay? You don't get the whole 15. All right, anyway, this is in this category of happiness and Krishna consciousness, because there's, you know, you can imagine if you could try Shishi Radha Gokulananda, Shishi Gornitai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman. Has anybody touched the moon lately? That's also one of the mystic cities, right? Prapti. And Prabhupada told the story of how he was in Calcutta and he was in the association of a yogi, right? And this yogi, he demonstrated his Prapti city and got a ripe mango, even though it wasn't mango season in West Bengal at the time. And that was quite impressive to Prabhupada. Has anybody had any experiences with mystic yogis? Yes? You want to tell us about it, Prabhupada? Is it a short story? I'm sorry? Oh, Sai Baba? It was some, like, dust at the... 400 people what?
Just dust 400 people continuously.
Oh, I see. All right. So, it was quite impressive, I think, huh? You were quite amazed by it. Yeah, I had some experience with mystic yogis as well. Matter of fact, a mystic yogi introduced me to ISKCON. Was really, I don't think I'll tell this whole story though. What do you think, Prana? No. Okay. Should I tell him, like, could I give like a 1-minute encapsulation? You think that would be acceptable? 2 minutes. Okay. So anyway, I came in the association of this Yogi Amrit Desai in my hippie days. And I stayed at his ashram for 3 days. They actually kicked me out of the ashram because I was inappropriate. But I got some glimpse that there was another realm of reality when I was there. And so then when Krishna pulled the string, you know, on my material life, he smashed, you know, he arranged for a wonderful automobile accident and I smashed my van, totaled it. I wasn't hurt somehow or other. And then my hippie wife ran off with another hippie and broke my heart. And so then I called this leading disciple of this yogi, And he said, well, don't come here now. They were a little afraid that I might redo, you know, my misbehavior the last time I was there. And so he said, what you should do, you still have a picture of Guruji, that's what they called him. And I said, yes. He said, well, what you should do is you should ask his photograph a question. And as if by magic, you'll get an answer. Am I 2 minutes up? I got 30 seconds left. Okay. He's taking, you know, he's making sure my anarthas don't come out, you know, in the Bhagavatam class. So, you know, for 5 weeks, I carried a dialogue on with this mystic yogi. I'd ask a question, and as if by magic, I'd get this little answer in the back of my head. It was mind-blowing. They were serious answers, you know. And like in the middle of the night, I was washing, and I won't go into all the details, but I gave up my bad habits. I started fasting. You know, I started praying to God. And then one night at 11:30, I was washing the dishes. I lived in a very, very remote area of a very remote state, the state of Vermont. I lived about 250 miles away from New York City. And I lived above a post office, a country post office, and a general store. And you wouldn't really know it was a town. It was just like a flashing yellow light on the highway. And at that time of night, you know, maybe every half hour or 45 minutes, a car would go by. Well, the yogi told me to go out into the highway and flag down a bus. Now, this is America. It's not India. Now, in India, you can flag buses down and they'll stop. But in America, you got to go to the bus station. So anyway, I flagged down the bus. I was out on the highway. This is 11:45 at night. You know, and you know, I'm out there for about 2 minutes, and lo and behold, a bus comes over the hill. I flag it down. It stops. I get on. You know, I go like 25 miles to the nearest town, Rutland, Vermont, and then the yogi tells me to take a bus to New York City, which I do, and I get there in mid-morning. And then the yogi tells me you're going to meet a very, very, very special person. You should deal with him very respectfully. Okay? And then Sanjaya Prabhu hit me up, you know, tried to get me to buy a Bhagavad Gita. And I started telling him about the yogi, you know, showed him a picture. You know, he thought, poop, 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 poop. You know, thought I was a little nutty. But I kept that. And then he showed me the Guru Shishya Parampara. And it really clicked. You know, he said, this is the way transcendental knowledge is transmitted. And so I started following him around. You know, he had his quota, so he's trying to shake me. You know, he was going up and down the escalators, but I was following him. And then he could see that I was sincere. And so he advised that I go to the temple. And so I go to the temple. I won't go into all the details. I think my 30 seconds is up, right? So... At any rate, you know, when I got to the Bhakta leader and I started telling him about the yogi and wanted to show him the photograph wasn't there. It had disappeared on me. Okay? Anyway, that's how I became. That was the first time I visited a temple. Next day I was chanting 16 rounds. It was so mind blowing for me. Okay, that's not the end of my experience with mystic yogis. A mystic yogi introduced me to my wife, of all places, in Vrindavan. Okay, I won't tell that story now. Let's get back to the philosophy, okay? Everyone awake? I'm just checking on you. I know it was a tough Harinam last night. You know, prana rolls in at 11 o'clock last night. So I want to make sure everyone's wide awake because we got some important discussions that will take place here. This actually, I found out later from Harisari Prabhu. Actually, when I was in the Bhakta program, my first service was washing the pots in the 55th Street Temple in New York City. And I heard, you know, they would play tapes for the devotees working in the kitchen. It was a huge temple of 250 devotees, you know, 11-story skyscraper, you know, midtown Manhattan. And so I was listening to tapes, and all of a sudden... there was room conversation between Yogi Amrit Desai and Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, how about that, huh? And that was a recent release from the BBT tape ministry, because Hari Sari told me years later that he actually arranged the darshan with Yogi Amrit Desai for Srila Prabhupada. And then because everybody know what param, what when Prabhupada quotes param drisva nivartate, what we're talking about? Param drisva nivartate? Yeah? Come on, guys, raise your hand. Okay, the yogi didn't have a higher taste, right? He had the happiness of these mystic powers, but he didn't have a higher taste. So guess what? He fell down, you know, and you know, he wasn't able to maintain dharmic standards with some of his female disciples, so his male disciples drove him away. But when he got driven away, he took shelter of a friend who just happened to have been, this is many years later, who happened to be the main donor of the Alachua temple. And so he came for Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja one day, or one year. This probably would have been about 1995, something like that. And Hari Sari was present, and they asked Yogi Amrit Desai to speak. And he spoke wonderfully about Srila Prabhupada. He and then Hari Sari told me that he actually had his own Radha Krishna deities that he'd been worshiping for years. But see, that's the problem, you know, with mystic. Anybody here have any mystic cities? I know, you don't want to admit it, probably, right? And, you know, in Sankirtan, though, you know, like devotees get really empowered. There's like a pretty amazing things that take place when you do Sankirtan, like miracles start taking place. I mean, maybe not quite as miraculous as having the photograph talking to you, but how many of you think that I'm crazy? Please raise your hand. Okay, there he goes, honest man. Okay, it actually happened, Prabhu. That's how I became a devotee. Right, Prana? Yeah, okay. This was, anybody ever see the comic strip, Ripley's Believe It or Not? In America, they have this comic strip called Ripley's Believe It or Not. All these really wild stories. But this my becoming a Hare Krishna devotee, not only did it appear in the Guinness World Book of Records, I better stop this praljalpa and get down to the philosophy here. Okay. So the issue is that Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karmani anavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. So pure devotional service, when one comes to that platform, he must be anyabhilashita sunyam, free from all material desires. That itta goes a little deeper. These are deep-rooted material desires, like motives. Okay, that's how Banu Swami translates it in his translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that itta. That's actually a very significant thing. So it gives us access, even under neophyte condition, to engage in Uttama Bhakti. So this is motive. So we may have some fleeting desires, you know, like there's a lot of brahmacharis here, but let's say a Bollywood movie starlet walks in the door, you know, and to take darshan, and then, you know, the brahmacharis look, you know, and then they go right back to their staunch brahmacharya. And so that's a fleeting desire. It doesn't disqualify one from Uttama Bhakti. You know, if the motive, I'm going to marry this Bollywood starlet, then we're maybe outside of Uttama Bhakti. We would be. You know, we become enamored. So fleeting desires, then jnana karma dhyanavritam. We're not covered by the pursuit of jnana or fruitive activities. And adi are other things, you know, like pursuing mystic yogas or being enamored by our mystic yogic powers. So this is what's significant. You know, when someone's on the bodily platform and he develops, like we see, you know, these really empowered personalities in the material realm, like Obama, or, you know, maybe the Queen of England or whatever. You know, they got a little, they kind of a little attached to their prowess, right? You know, they think that they're borrowed plumes. They belong to me. Look how great I am. You know, there's that real strong tendency. There's an interesting verse that connects with this discussion from the 11th canto, 2nd chapter. Bayam duti yabhi niveshita shad ishari petasha vipari yoshmiti tanmayato buddha abhijetam bhaktyaika yesham guru devatatma. Fear overcomes the living entity when he misidentifies himself as a material body. Now this illusory understanding takes place under the influence of the Lord's material energy. And when this takes place, when one has this misidentification, he goes through vipariyoshmiti in Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatana Goswami. This is in Madhya 22. Srila Prabhupada translates the same verse, the same Bhagavatam verse appears, and Prabhupada translates vipariyoshmiti as a role reversal. Rather than seeing oneself as Krishna's servant, one becomes Krishna's competitor. In case you guys don't know it, I am the center of the universe. Okay, this is the power of the illusory energy. And hey, 99.99% of humanity is in that consciousness when you really look at it. This is what the false ego does. We become the center of the universe, and every aspect of that universe is there for our gratification. And that's what we're thinking. You know, I got to go and I got to enjoy because I am the center of the universe. Okay, so let us say that this end of the table is the grossly conditioned soul, materially conditioned soul. And he feels himself, he views himself, has this understanding that he's the center of the universe. And this end of the spectrum is the self-realized devotee. And he understands that Krishna is the center of the universe and that my whole life is dedicated to pleasing him. This person over here is thinking, my whole life is dedicated to pleasing me. Alright? So as we take up devotional service, we start transiting from this side of the dais to that side. So we're somewhere in between there. So one of the pitfalls that is potentially available for the jiva is this becoming enamored with mystic yoga perfections. It's not so common for us in these days, you know, but it happened with Yogi Amrita Desire. He got enamored by it and kind of lost track of who he should be pleasing. You know, he became on the bodily, got on the bodily platform and became overcome by his senses. So, actually, it probably wasn't proper to mention his name, but I think the point is, I saw this when I first visited his ashram. Yeah, I had some incredible experiences where actually Prabhupada came to me in a dream. I'd never seen him before. Actually, my first encounter with Srila Prabhupada was the same hippie wife that Krishna had sent to me to torture me. You know, I had went with her to Montreal, Canada, to enjoy one weekend. And as we did, naturally, was fight the whole weekend. This is the way the material energy works. You're thinking you're going to enjoy, but you just are tortured. And at the end of the weekend, we were in the Montreal bus station waiting for a bus to go back to the United States. And there was this transcendentally peaceful Mataji distributing Prabhupada's books in the bus station. So I began my Sankirtan career. I went up to her and tried to talk her into giving me a Bhagavad Gita for free. But she wouldn't do it. She gave me a King of Knowledge. But she said, I'll give this to you, but you have to promise me that you'll read it. Okay, at that point, I wasn't even talking to this young lady that had accompanied me to Canada. So I sat down and I read it when I was on the bus. And it was like amazing. Talk about mystic powers. As I was reading, I noticed that the bus left the pavement and started flying down the highway. You know, it was just incredible, you know, the potency of how drastically my consciousness was altered by reading this book. And what was even more powerful was that the philosophy made so much sense to me. And the one thing that bewildered me, though, was that the Sakshi Gopal pastime is there, you know, the deity that bears witness. And here I am from a Christian, you know, country, you know, and I never, what is this about a deity that walks half the way across India to bear witness? That didn't make any sense to me. And I had all these questions, but I lived in the middle of nowhere. You know, so here I am, stuck, you know, in the middle of Vermont, you know, being tortured. And, you know, from time to time, you know, I'd pick up this King of Knowledge, and I'd look at this amazing picture of Srila Prabhupada in the back of it. And I just thought to myself, he is really an amazing-looking personality. But I noticed, retrospectively, as I look back, that my life started changing from the point I got that book. You know, it was like in the Gulf War. This was when they first started using smart bombs. Anybody know what a smart bomb is? Yeah, it was like they would send off, you know, this is like the latest technology in killing people. They would have a bomb that was somehow or other guided by, you know, high technology, so it'd go around corners and then it'd go in and hit its target, you know, blow the building up and all the people in it. So Prabhupada's books, you know, for me, it was like a smart bomb, you know, got in there right in the middle of my mayak world, my intense illusion, and blew it apart, started blowing it apart, you know. So as I look back, I could see all these changes taking place in my life. And then, you know, then shortly after, I had the experience with the Yogi Amrita Desai. Oops, so I shouldn't say the names. I won't make any offenses. Prabhupada usually wouldn't quote names, but you know, at least from the Vyasa Sangha. But on morning walks, he would. When I was researching for this class, I saw Sai Baba in the inner base, kind of along the same lines as this. Anyway, Hare Krishna. So when Prabhupada had this potency, he had, you know, it's described like I was mentioning in the first verse of the sixth chapter of the fifth canto. The pure devotee is equipped with all of the mystic powers, and he has them at his disposal. He just doesn't show them off. He only uses them, and it's actually Krishna that equips them, you know, gives them the, just empowers him. You know, where does Prabhupada's effulgence come from? Does Prabhupada throw an effulgence switch in his subtle body? No. Krishna just gives it to him. Where does Vishwambar Prabhu's effulgence come from when he's out on book distribution? You know, it's Krishna that gives it to him. He didn't even know he's got it. You know, it's just there at the right time. So people just see him and say, my God, I don't know what that guy's doing, but I want whatever he's got. You know, and that's what empowered book distributors, they've got this Shakti that's just incredible. Where does it come from? It comes from Krishna, and a properly situated devotee understands this point and doesn't become enamored by the Shakti that Krishna gives him. So This will probably be the last time I'll ever be invited to give class at the Manor. So I better keep my mouth shut now before they actually kick me out of the temple. I want to stop now. I'll read the verse again. Excuse my American humor. I apologize. I guess it's just all this heavy conditioning from my early years in front of the television set. Let me read the translation again, and maybe there's some questions or comments or chastisements. When the sannyasis saw the brilliant illumination of the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, their minds were attracted, and they immediately gave up their sitting places and stood in respect. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhu. Are you from Bengal?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I probably didn't pronounce it very well. I've been living in Bengal for 16 years, but I'm oblivious to the language.
Grammatically, because when you add R and A at the end, uh-huh. It becomes a noun in the possessive sense.
Okay. Okay.
But you translated that as Mayavadi Sannyasi. There is no adjective to qualify this sentence. So where does this Mayavadi come from?
Well, that's contextual translation, because Prakashananda Sarasvati and his cohorts were Mayavadis. So Prabhupada just made that adjustment to make it more accessible to us and kind of drive home the point, you know, of the, how compassionate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to, like, deliver the Mayavadis with this effulgence that was as bright as millions of suns. Well, you see, the thing is that what my understanding, I'm kind of fool number one. Somehow I got up on this seat. But I'm a Bangladeshi na, okay? You know, that's one of the few phrases that I know in the Bengali language, you know, when people come up and start talking to me, you know, on the Bhagirathi Express from Krishnanagar to Calcutta. And so I can't really speak so authoritatively on that point that you're making. I mean, I can't speak at all about it, but what I will offer is that Shivaram Swami wrote a book called the Bhaktivedanta Purports, okay? And it essentially was offering another perspective to academicians who sometimes were critical of Srila Prabhupada's books. You know, that Prabhupada would, regardless of whether Astanga Yoga was being presented or Naishkam Karma Yoga was being presented, Prabhupada would always put it on the platform of Uttama Bhakti, devotional service. And so the point is that Prabhupada was preaching in such a way and to such people that, for the most part, his target, because of the instructions that he got at this very first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, you know, when he first met him, you know, he hadn't even got off the floor yet. He was still offering dandavats. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said to him, he came with his friend, you know, a college friend, and he said, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, "You are educated young men. You should dedicate your lives to preaching Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message to the English-speaking world." So, you know, that's where I came from. I'm not really even a qualified Malecha. You know, I'm the lowest of the low. And Prabhupada targeted us and he targeted the whole world. And if we had the understanding of the level of compassion that Srila Prabhupada had and the incredible level of Shakti that he had in inducing people, you know, through mystic yogis or whatever, you know, to take up devotional service, then, you know, it kind of becomes a mute, is it in the legal profession, I think it's called a moot argument. You know, there's a level of perfection that goes way beyond the achincha. It's achincha, you know, in Srila Prabhupada's books. Just like how, you know, when I started reading his Prabhupada's books on this Greyhound bus, this is the biggest airline or the biggest bus company in America. Have you been to America? Have you ridden a Greyhound bus? You know, you can't remember. Anyway, have you ever seen a huge American bus start flying off of the pavement? Like in a cartoon or something? Anyway, that's what I experienced. You know, whether it actually took place or not, but that was what my consciousness was like. This is amazing. And this came from Prabhupada's presentation of the King of Knowledge. You know, so I think that's what we need to focus on. You know, and then there is this verse, oh, what is it? Krishna. 11, no, first canto, fifth chapter, 11th text. God, when you get old, they just things aren't there anymore, you know, when you need them. It's the, Narada's instructions to Vyasadeva, where Tadvag Vishargo Janataga Viplavo Yasmin Pratishlokam Abad Avadyati. Anyway, but that, you know, even though in, you know, this literature is meant to create a revolution in the impious lives of this world's misdirected civilization. Okay, even if it's imperfectly composed, I show Prabhupada, you know, in the first, when he first translated the first canto, you know, he was in India, living at Radhadamodar Temple, and he didn't have any, like, hippied out PhDs in England in English from Ohio State University to do the editing for him. So when he came, you know, there were some grammatical errors, but it was, even though imperfectly composed, it still has the power to deliver. I'm not saying that this is imperfect. From maybe a grammatical, Bengali grammatical standpoint, there's, you know, where did that Mayavadi come in? The same thing that the academicians would make about, where did devotional service come in here? We're talking about Nishkam Karma Yoga. Okay? But he understood that people in America at the time were bewildered by all these bogey yogis that were coming, you know, and offering, you know, hanging up there, you know, you can eat meat and still do, you know, do yoga and become God in 60 days. You just pay your fee, you know. And, I mean, it was wild what was going on. I had friends that surrendered to the 16-year-old perfect master. You know, and there was, you know, God, you know, it was crazy what was going on then. So just bhakti. Bhakti, bhakti, bhakti. That's what we need. We don't need Mayavadi. You know, we need Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada's mercy. It's the best I could do. Anybody else want to bail me out?